Up in the morning and in the field, breaking my back just to pay my bills. Loving what I do till the day I'm dead. I'll be working on my old homestead.
Welcome back, folks. This is Lloyd Creech the second.
Paul McDaniel.
And you're listening to Radio Hour with EKH on 104.9 FM, WSKV, Stanton, Kentucky. Hope everybody's having a great, wonderful, snowy, chilly weekend.
Well, it's nasty out there.
And stuff. Last time we was on here, it was New Year's, and we was having some really good weather. And then we made it through that negative 28 wind chill that froze everything.
Well, you know, people talking about this global warming and that's causing this and that. But, you know, the first couple of years I came to Kentucky back in the early 70s, it wasn't any different than it is right now.
Yeah.
We'd have some cold nights and we'd have some warm days. And us boys just kind of wore around gum boots and sweaters.
Yeah.
And a cap all winter. And it, I don't see much difference between then and right now.
Well, we will not go into global warming. I have mixed feelings about global warming and stuff, conspiracy theories. I'll just leave that alone. We ain't doing that. But it's, you know, it was negative 28 there for about 2 or 3 days. And last week, I mean, well, last week we got up almost 60.
Well, we did have 60 down there in the hollow one day.
And so then the rain came in. And the wind and everything. Now it's snowing a little bit. They're like, "Oh, we get 4 inches." No, we ain't gonna get 4 inches of snow. It was just 60 the other day.
Well, coming across Furnace Mountain there, I seen a couple of places on the side of the road that there was just looked more like trash laid out there than it was snow because it was just a couple of little white spots.
Yeah, you know, your higher elevations. Yeah, I can see that. But for the most part, you know. I don't, you know, and we're recording this on Friday night stuff. I don't know what it's going to do Friday night and Saturday.
It doesn't either.
But, yeah, and stuff. I left Camargo to go drop off my work can. It was 38 degrees. Got to Mount Sterling. It was 35 or 36. Got back over here to Powell County. It had warmed up 1 degree, so.
Well, I got two thermometers. I got one on the front part of the house, and I got one on the end of the house.
Uh-huh.
And both of them read 5 to 6 degrees apart from each other.
Really?
It depends on which way the wind's blowing and which way the, you know.
Sunshine.
Now, if it gets down real, real cold, they both read the same. But, you know, I really don't even look at the thermometer anymore. I go outside and I go, well, I don't have enough clothes on. I'll go in the house, put some more on, you know. Or I'll come out and I'll take some clothes off, you know. And that's
yeah, my farmhand, he texted me Friday morning. And Friday, the phones was just not working. Nobody, I don't guess. I guess it was a system-wide outage or something or other. Phones were not working correctly and stuff. But I finally went and got picked him up and everything. And he's like, yeah, we'll work today. You know, it's just snowing a little bit. And,
mm-hmm.
and we got out there, and that, you know, we're out in the middle of an open field.
That,
stuff.
That wind gets you.
That wind coming through there. And he's like, it's not too bad. I'm actually sweating a little bit. I was like, yeah, it's because we're working right now. Wait until we quit working and stuff. And so about, you know, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I was like, hey, I need to get the power can to do radio and everything. I said, I'm going to have to take you home a little bit early. And he said, that's fine. He said, my hands are freezing to death right now. I'm like, yeah, what happened to sweating out here and stuff. And, you know, he's 30 years old and stuff. And that wind was just, it was kind of bone chilling.
Well, you know, 30 years old, you can do a lot of bragging.
Yeah.
It seems like I remember doing some myself. But anymore, you don't brag about nothing. Not in Kentucky. It'll just turn right around on you and smack you in the back of the head. Yeah.
You know. Slap you real good.
So when you first started saying the station 104.9, I got to say this. I was talking to some good friends of mine, Gordon and Lynn. They wanted to listen to the show tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And I told her 104.9.
Uh-huh.
Well, she looked it up in her little computer thing, and it come on, and they started talking Spanish to her.
Huh?
I said, so there must be a 104.9 down in Tijuana or something.
Well, yeah, there's more than one 104.9 stuff.
Well, that's what jumped out at her, and she said, wait a minute, where are you going to do this show with?
And so it's just, you know, in a general area and stuff, because there's a lot of times that I try to pick up this and this one here, and I'll get the Betaville Christian channel and stuff.
WLJC.
Yeah, WLJC and stuff, and so, because they're close together and stuff, or they'll bounce off each other.
Well, now in Millersburg, when I'm working up there, you know, I lose this station on 627 as soon as I leave Winchester.
Yeah.
So I put on that old Hank, you know, and listen to him. But there's sometimes I'll flip it over on 104.9 while I'm at Millersburg, and I get some whole completely different. But it's coming in crystal clear.
Yeah.
But it doesn't speak Spanish.
Yeah. And stuff. Yeah, that's true and stuff. You know, it depends on if it's a sunny, no cloud in the sky day. Or, well, here's the thing. So, one of my presents that I think it was for my birthday that my wife got me, she got some two-way walkie-talkies and stuff. When it's wintertime outside and it's cold wintertime, my phone will not last very long outside and stuff.
Pulls
the battery down really quick. And so she knows this, so she went and bought us some walkie-talkies. And she's like, it's got a 30-mile range on them. I'm like, that's really cool. 30 miles, that's really good.
As long as there's not a hill in between you.
And so I took them with me to the farm one day. She kept one at home. We checked all the channels and stuff to see which one was open and which one wasn't. And we finally found a channel. And so I was trying to call her and talk to her to see if they worked. We never could get any of the channels to work. And it's only 7 miles between the house and the farm. But you got, you know, probably 15, 20 hills. You got 1,000 houses. You got, you know, all these cell towers and everything and stuff. And so that ain't going to work. The walkie-talkies is a wonderful idea. It's just not going to work for the 7 miles.
Yeah, I'm not sure what frequency range they work on. Or it's AM or FM or some other thing.
I don't know either. And so I'm thinking about leaving one at the store with my parents and keeping one with me while I'm on the farm. So if something happens to me and my phone's not working, at least I can get the store to answer. And also we was thinking about, too, was giving Jordan one because there's a few times that I can send him off to go do a job on one side of the farm, and I can stay back and work on equipment or something or other, and if I need to get a hold of him or something like that.
Well, now I'll tell you something that will work, and I don't care whether there's a hill there or not, is a Morse code.
Yeah, but you got to have a Morse code machine and
well, that ain't no big
electric
deal.
And I don't have that out in the middle of
a
field.
A battery and...
And stuff. This is coming from somebody that lives off grid. You don't have Morse code at your house.
Well, I still got some of the parts. I had it in high school. I was actually licensed.
Yeah.
You know, a novice broadcast license. But I had a piece of wire just wrapped around the house, and I could talk to the world.
Really?
You know, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da.
And that's great and stuff. I don't have that.
I'm just joking with you, Lloyd.
That would be cool.
It's either that or two tin cans and a string, you know.
Yeah, that'd be a long string, be a big fishing line there.
Yeah.
But so we was just trying to use these walkie-talkies put them to work and everything. So we haven't brought them back to the farm yet. But I'm just, you know, you get out there, you get to working and stuff. It's just like today and stuff. So Jordan was, I was like, Jordan, let's stop. Let's go eat, get us a bite to eat and everything, warm up a little bit. And then we'll come back to it. And so he goes, well, you're going to drive a tractor and I'm going to drive a truck, right? And I said, no. I said, you just drive a truck and I'll ride with you and everything. I got one of these little Isuzu carries and stuff. They're really small trucks and stuff. They're really small, but they're very handy. Four-wheel drive, big old bed on it and stuff. Go just about anywhere.
Don't use any gas.
Don't use any gas. It's got a like a 3-cylinder motorcycle engine on it, and it's got about 44 horsepower is what the thing's got.
Well, that's a lot of power.
That's a lot of power. A lot of torque. And so he gets in it and we take off and everything. Well, just about got stuck through the little ditch and stuff. It rained a lot.
You mean you haven't been stuck this week?
No, I haven't.
Lloyd, what's wrong with you?
And so I told him I need to back up and go up the hill and everything and give it some gas so we can make it up on the next little ridge and everything. And he goes, man, I'm nervous. And I'm like, why are you nervous for? And he goes, because you're riding with me. You never ride with me. And I'm like, yeah, because I'm the one doing the driving all the time. And stuff. It's nice to have somebody else driving every now and then. And so we're going up the muddy hill and everything. And he loses his momentum coming up this hill. Don't get enough gas. and it spins out.
He starts going backwards with it?
And so he stops. Oh, no. And I'm like, well, back up just a little bit. Give it all the gas you can give it, and we'll go on and stuff. He backs it right into the ditch and stuff. We're, you know, we're only about an eighth of a mile from the store then. And he says, what are we going to do? And I says, well, it's lunchtime, so I'm going to go get me something to eat. And then you're going to walk back out to the tractor, because the tractor's another half mile down the road. And I said, you're going to walk and get the tractor and bring it up here, and we're going to get this truck unstuck. And so we walked across the street, got into the store, and they seen us walking. They're like, what are y'all doing walking and stuff? I said, yeah, Jordan, what are we doing walking and stuff? He goes, I got the truck stuck. I was like, yeah, see, I'm not the one that gets stuck all the time. He got stuck today and stuff. And then I made him walk back and get the tractor that was so far down the road.
So he don't want to get stuck anymore?
He don't want to get stuck no more. And then he's got a comfort zone, and he does not like to get out of his comfort zone. And that's fine. That's cool and everything. But you're on a farm, so you got to get out of it from time to time.
Yeah, where it's unpredictable. You don't know what you're
doing. And so he had to go get the big cab tractor to come pull the truck out. And he seen me at the top of the hill, and he's at the bottom of the hill, and it's muddy and everything, and bad muddy. And we don't know what gravel is. And so I waved him on and stuff. He's like, no, I ain't coming up that muddy hill. And I'm like, you got four-wheel drive. Come on. And so he finally gets up there and stuff, pulls the truck out. And so I unhook him and throw the chain in the back of the truck, get in the truck, and I motion him to go on back down the hill in reverse, because there's not enough room to turn around. And he cleaned some ditches out while going in reverse.
Well, that's good. That's good. Yeah.
The same ditch he hit up top is the same ditch he ran into with the tractor. And once you get into that rut or ditch,
you're in it.
You're in it until you get to the bottom of it. So he cleaned it out real good for me and everything and stuff. And he said, you can sit there just watching him shake his head and everything.
Well, I do that on purpose on my hill road. You know, I'll get the tractor up on top, and then I'll ride the ditch line down, and that just keeps it open.
Yeah, usually have you been sipping anything when you do that? Or
no, but I probably should sometimes.
But he cleaned out the ditch for me real good. But we got going back and stuff, and I seen him cross the creek on up the hill a little bit. I'm like, what's he doing up there? And so he crossed the creek and went on. So and when we got back to the fence line that we're cleaning out and everything, and I was like, hey, why did you do that for? He said, because I knew I'd get stuck in the other part if I went down there. Like, good thinking and stuff, because
he's starting to learn, huh?
Yeah, he's starting to learn now. He's starting to get out of his comfort zone. Just because the tractor's leaning does not mean it's going to fall over.
No.
And stuff. Tractors can take a whole lot as long as you still share that thing that you may possibly turn over. And stuff. And when you think that, this tractor ain't going to ever turn over.
Well, when you're on a tractor, don't ever take it that, you know, you're everything's cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they can change on you real quick.
Mm-hmm. Especially when as much rain as we've got in the last couple of days and stuff. But we got 150 foot of woven wire out of the fence row. We're moving on now. It's going to be another 2 weeks, and we'll be pulling.
Well, now, avoid 2 weeks. Let's see now. How many times did I tell you when I was going to have all them bricks laid just in it? And then that lasted and went on and on and on. So we're going to see this 2 weeks on this fence.
Well, that's what I say, but it's going to be more like a month or so. Cause
okay.
We had to do that cold spell, and then we got that call that one of the rental houses, every line in the rental house busted, every single line. And so we pulled all new red and blue picks.
I don't know how you put up with it, you know.
And I don't mind to do water. Sewer, I'm a little bit hesitant on doing sewer.
Well, it's okay if you just got like a broken line or something, but the way you were talking on that house, it was pretty much wiped out.
It was wiped out. When I went up there to check on the house, I pulled the hot water line to see what kind of, it was CPVC and stuff, which is most houses and everything and stuff, but it literally landed in my hand. I was like, oh no. And stuff. And so we went in there, ripped open the belly, and it was just, you know, when you do CPVC and stuff, you don't know which one's the hot line, which one's the cold line, or anything like that. So we had to start it from scratch, from the water heater, and just run all... Just
rebuild the whole thing?
Rebuild the whole entire system. So you got two busted lines up there, and then you're pulling new red and blue PEX lines in there. So you got four lines in there, and you're trying to figure out, you know, it's easy when you're looking at your bathtub. Oh, cold water's on the right, hot water's on your left. And so, okay, your sinks are all like that, your commode's like that, and, you know, all your bathtub's like that. But when you're laying upside down underneath of a house and stuff, you know, your right is on your left, and your left is on your right. Oh, wait a minute, they're going up the same hole, so you don't know which one's
left. Was this anything like fixing the wiring in the store that time?
It's pretty rough.
Everything.
It's pretty rough.
Dragging it out of there and putting it all back in.
Yeah, you got to just start from scratch, just scrap it all out and everything. We had a truck bed full of busted pipes and stuff. So we just, you know, started from the hot water heater and come out and started from the black line coming out of the ground, which is your cold water, and just started from there and just rebuilt the entire house. Stuff. It took us about 3 days to pull all new line, and took us 4 hours to hook all of it back to, you know, after you stubbed it and everything, to go back in and put all your proper fittings and everything. And
that sounds like that little Bassey Ferguson tractor I bought in 1955. Somebody decided they were going to rewire it.
Yeah.
And it looked like octopuses having baby octopuses. The stuff was hanging off that tractor every which way. And somebody had put a single wire alternator on it.
Uh-huh.
Well, they run the wire all the way around the front of the tractor, all the way to the back, underneath the seat, back around, and right back to the alternator.
Wow.
I said, boy, this is good. So instead of trying to fix the wiring on it, I took a pair of side cutters, and I cut every piece of wire out of that thing.
Sometimes it's just easier to do.
But whoever wired that, you know, now I don't know if they were drinking corn or rye, but
they was drinking something.
They were drinking something. But
all right. So the last time we was on here, we was talking about Mr. Wolf, and he's a blacksmith. He used to work for the Fort Boonesboro. He was the teacher there at Fort Moonsboro, teach you how to be a blacksmith and everything. And one thing he said, so I've got into carving spoons out of wood, and I've carved three of them now. One for my wife, I gave her for Christmas present. I gave John and Alicia one. They're the ones that gave me the carving set, so I made them a spoon just for them. And then I'm working on another one that Mr. Wolf showed me from his collection. I'm like, I fell in love with it, so I'm going to start making it, you know, one myself.
Well, cool.
And then he's like, hey, I'm going to make you something special. I'm like, okay. So he comes back like 2 days later, a day or two later, and he's like, here's your carving knife that I made. So,
oh, he made you a knife.
So he made me a carving knife, and it's a double-sided. It's made for spoons and everything, and so it's really sharp. And see, I sharpen all my knives with leather now and stuff. It's ridiculous. It's just like a scalpel,
yeah,
and stuff. And so it's really fun. But one thing he told me when he gave me that knife was, okay, I'm going to give you this knife. You owe me nothing for this knife and stuff. And he left the handle to where I could shape it for my own hand and everything. And I was like, you know, thank you and stuff. He said, there's one condition to this knife, and this thing will forever stick with me and stuff, is he says, you have to share your experience with somebody that wants to do the same thing.
So, well, that makes sense.
And stuff. So my farmhand, he's kind of artistic, and he's really good with certain things. And stuff, and he's like, man, I would love to understand, you know, wood carving and stuff. He said, you know, I've whittled, you know, a little bit here and there and stuff. I said, well, whittling and carving's kind of along the same lines, but two completely different things at the same time. And so I got him interested in doing these spoons, and he's like, yeah. He said, like, you know, I've only got a little pocket knife and everything. And I was like, well, you'll need more than a pocket knife to whittle a spoon, unless you're going to be there for 30 years on the same spoon. And so I got on Amazon for $32. You can buy a basic startup kit. and stuff. It's a box. It comes with a detailing knife, a rough end knife, a cupping knife, and a spoon blank, a leather sheath for sharpening. It's got some sharpening mineral with it, and it comes with a pair of gloves.
Oh, wow.
And it comes in its own box and everything. So for $32, you can get this.
Well, that's cheap enough.
It is. It's really cheap. And so when Mr. Wolf told me, he said, you know, you need to share this with somebody else. And stuff. And so I got a three-year-old son there at the house, and this is one thing I'll be sharing with him when he gets of age and everything. But for now, I got a 30-year-old farmhand that's interested in it. And so I give him that set today, Friday. And he's like, holy cow. He said, thank you. He said, you don't know how much this means to me.
Well, you know, he may turn out like that guy I was talking about. No, doggone it, too. That guy that carved the birds.
Uh-huh.
I was just at my friends Gordon and Lynn's the other day, and, you know, I meant to ask them because they probably remember his name.
Uh-huh.
But he became world-renowned.
Really?
Yeah.
And so, uh-huh. Maybe this guy will stuff because he's asking me. He's like, Lloyd, he's like, so what do you want me to do first? And I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, do I do the handle first? Do I do the cupping first? Do I do the bottom? I said, that's up to you. I said,
just whatever comes across his mind.
I says, don't go into it blindly. Have some kind of thought about it before you start. But don't go into it blindly. But start with the handle first or start scooping out first. But leave you enough material because when you do the spoon, Not only are you carving out the dip in the spoon, but you also got to carve the underside of the spoon.
Right, it's got to be rounded on the...
And so if you're going to use it for an actual spoon, it's got to have some kind of thickness to it to hold liquid. A spoon with a hole in it is not a spoon. It's just a spoon with a hole that won't hold no liquid. Just it might hold ice cream, but it won't hold water or soup. And so he goes, I never thought of that. And I'm like, yeah, this is stuff that you have to think about.
Yeah, I never had a spoon that ever held ice cream very long.
Well, that's true. That stuff, but, you know, with a wooden spoon, that you've got to actually think about what you're doing and the thicknesses.
Well, sometime when you were over, back when I was younger, I carved things. I just used an old Barlow with a box blade on it.
Yeah, that was the first carving knife I ever had.
I had little Barlow figurines. I got a picture. It's supposed to be a self-portrait of me standing there with a top hat on.
Yeah.
It turned out pretty good, you know. Yeah, and I had a little spoon I carved out, a little bitty one, and just nothing fancy, you know.
Yeah, and so, you know, there's all people that you just meet every day and stuff, and you're like, hey, I started carving. I'm like, yeah, my dad did that, and we got all these spoons and stuff. But what impressed me a lot was, I gave Teresa one for Christmas and stuff. The very first one I ever did, I give it to her for Christmas, a Christmas present. We always give, always make her at least one thing for Christmas every year. Instead of just going out and buying something random that she'll just sit on the shelf for a year and then throw it away.
Right.
And stuff, I try to always make her something.
Well, it's special that way.
You know? Yeah. Because you got your heart into it. You got your soul, your time, your money into it and everything. And so we was making spaghetti the other night, and she used that spoon as a spaghetti spoon.
Oh, cool.
And she says, Lloyd, she said, this spoon is absolutely perfect because it's not too deep that stuff will get in it and get caught, but it's deep enough to where you can still mix with it and everything like this. And so hers is made out of cherry, and then it's got butcher block oil and stuff on it. It's been dipped twice and sanded twice. Turned out to be a really nice spoon. She said, I absolutely love it and stuff. I said, you have absolutely thrilled me to death that I give you spoon and it just didn't sit in the drawer.
Well, now, did you tell her that, you know, you had full intentions of making a pasta spoon when you made that thing?
No.
So you kept that back.
Yeah, I did not. I started, John Alicia got this thing for me. I go out and I don't ever throw scrap wood away. I'm kind of like a hoarder when it comes to wood. And so I'm out there going through my wood box and everything. And I'm like, well, there's some cherry. It's that wormy cherry and stuff, but it's still cherry. And so I start cutting blanks out and everything. And just started carving and stuff. And it turned out really nice. But, you know, I texted you that I think I'm allergic to cherry wood.
Well, I never heard that before, but...
I got to thinking about it, Paul. It's not I'm allergic to cherry wood. I'm allergic to the cherry wood dust and stuff. Because the only time I use anything on the spoons and stuff is I use a, what's the saw, jigsaw on cutting the general curves. Form out.
Yeah.
And it produces a lot of fine dust. And I was in there with no fan or anything on, blowing the dust away. And I inhaled that dust, and that I got sick from about 4 hours.
Well, see, it's mostly, with me, it's the cedar, but it's mostly the dust on the cedar, too.
Yeah.
But then it bothers me so much that, you know, I'm choked up for a day or two, and then just smelling it just kind of repulses me, you know.
And stuff. And so I got to thinking about that stuff. So I'm sitting there, you know, carving this wood, taking big old chunks of wood off of it and everything, getting the general form down and stuff. And I'm like, it's not making me sick and stuff. What it was that dust.
That dust.
I was inhaling that dust and stuff. I didn't have no filtration or nothing on while I was cutting the blank and everything. And stuff, but as long as I was sitting there just carving stuff, I was fine and stuff. But the dust,
Well, anything real fine like that gets in your lungs is going to end up in your bloodstream.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So,
talking about that, I built my own homemade vacuum system for my garage a couple years ago, and it has a 5-gallon bucket. Once it gets about half full, it shuts off, and then I have to go empty the 5-gallon bucket. Well, now they make this thing. It's called a Typhoon adapter or something.
Typhoon adapter.
And it sits on top of the bucket, and it's supposed to pick up about two-thirds of a bucket or three-quarter of a bucket before it will kick your vacuum cleaner out. And so it's a shop vac hooked into another orifice, and it cleans the air. The dust particles from the bucket will not make it to your shop vacs, what it is. And stuff. I already use a high filtration for the shop vac for wood dust and everything and stuff, but this will keep it from making it back to the shop vac. So,
well,
and stuff. It's $65 and stuff.
Well, you know, my shop is so wide open, you know, the sides and stuff. You know, if I'm working in the summer in there, I just keep a big giant fan blowing everything away from me. You know, it makes it a little bit better. But I've been doing a little shop project here lately, too. I made an oven.
Yeah, guys, you should see this thing. It's really cool. He showed me pictures. He sent me pictures of it earlier today and stuff, but I could not respond to him because the cell towers were down and everything and stuff. But it looks really cool.
Well, back years ago, they used to make a tin oven that sat on top of a heating stove.
Uh-huh.
People didn't have ovens in their house, you know, just had some, everybody had heat. And they were small tin ovens, and they usually had two shelves, one low and one high. And you could, you know, I always made bread pudding in the one I had. And so they do pretty good, but I couldn't find one. And probably could have gone online and got one. Yeah. Lloyd said there's one across the street there, but I couldn't find it. But I had it in my mind I was going to make one.
Uh-huh.
And I just went down to the barn and started dragging junk out. And I did have to buy a little angle iron. But I've got that thing made, and I painted it red. And it's just as pretty as it can be.
You would never paint anything red. Everything he owns is red, guys.
Well, you know, I used my last can of red paint today.
Good.
I stuck it on my wood stove in the house in there, and that thing got real hot inside.
Really?
Yeah, so I can't wait to figure out something to bake in it.
You going to put a temperature gauge or anything in there?
Yeah, I had one in there.
Okay.
And just in a few minutes, it got up to 200 degrees.
Really?
You know, and the stove was just idling.
Yeah.
But now, they still probably make them. I remember Coleman made one.
Yeah, Coleman's got one.
Well, they had them for like campfires if you went camping. You know, but they were little tiny little things. You'd do a little tray of biscuits in it or something. But you drag coals out of the fire and set it on a coals.
Uh-huh.
You know, you can bake it. But the one I had it was probably in late 1800s, early 1900s. It was called a Toledo.
Uh-huh.
And it was red and black. And I don't know whatever happened to that thing. Had a copper bottom in it. Now, this one here's got an aluminum bottom in it, cast aluminum bottom in it. But now it turned out pretty neat. It's got handles on it and got a pretty little doorknob on it,
and it's two layer and stuff. So you got the bottom, you know, it's got the bottom layer, and it's got one in the top too. And so he you know, cooked biscuits, whatever stuff.
Well, I was using up every piece of old scrap metal I had. You know, I wanted sheet metal, something, but good hard sheet metal, yeah. Something, one real flexible. And I got down to where the only piece I had left was an old mangled up piece, and I said, well, I need to make a door.
Uh-huh.
And I kept thinking, I said, you know, if I could just find the front off an old breaker box, I said, that would be perfect.
Yeah.
And I was in town yesterday, and I stopped down at my buddy Perry's down there at the machine shop in town, and I told him what I was doing and what I really needed, and he turned around and reached down and handed me the door off of it. So it was just perfect fit.
Yeah.
I took it home, sanded it down, painted it, and put hinges on it, and stuck it on there.
Well, it looks really, really cool and stuff. Tell them about the stove that you put it on and stuff, because you had to go get you a new stove.
Well, my old heating stove had an old Ashley, and it was just burnt out and cracks in it and everything, and it just smoking the house up, and I was up putting wood in it every 2 or 3 hours, couldn't keep a fire in it. So I bought one of these ones that I call them the old Fisher-looking stoves. They're a steel plate stove with a glass door in it, and I tried getting one through Northern Tool, and they said, well, we'll ship one to Irvin for you for $800, and
yeah.
I had to go to Irvin and pick it up. And, well, I stopped at DeWitt Center. I was going to go in and put money in the bank. I think I said this last time, but I stopped in there at DeWitt Center and went back to get a piece of stovepipe and looked. Well, there was one on the floor back there just identical to the one Northern Tool wanted. And
yeah.
Josh Rogers, the manager down there, heck of a good guy, you know, and he says, well, I'll tell you what we'll do. And they sent it up. I bought that one. They sent it to the house for me, and two boys brought it in the house and set it in there, 350-pound stove, and for $140 less than what Northern Tool wanted.
Yeah.
And but now that is the handiest little stove. I put wood in it at 4 o'clock yesterday evening, banked it down, and I didn't get up to put any more wood in that thing until 2 o'clock this morning.
Really?
And it still had a glowing bed of coals in there, and that house was just warm as toast.
Yeah, you saying before the show and stuff that you'd only lit one match to.
I only lit it one time. It doesn't go.
It's just stayed going.
But it get down. You know, you have to clean the ash out pretty regular because it doesn't have a grate in it. You know, so it's just fire brick in the bottom. So you know, every other day I got to scoop out a lot of ash and everything. But I can leave just a little small shovelful of coals in there and throw some wood in that thing and close it down. Next few minutes, you just watch the. It just takes off. But the only control you got over the draft is just the damper in the pipe.
Oh, yeah. You tell me about
that. Because it ain't got no doohickeys or thingamajigs down there at the bottom to push or pull or nothing.
Yeah.
But I've gotten used to it now. If I can just get the dog and the cat out of the way so I can get the door open. They like that little window in the front of it. You know, they like laying right up there. You know, they feel that heat coming off of it.
Oh, yeah.
First, you got to boot the cat, and then you got to shove the dog over and then, you know, and get to it. But I like it. You know, I'm getting older now, and that jumping up and down all night, putting wood in the fire, just don't get it. And the thing is, I'm only bringing in wood into the house every third day now instead of, you know, every day.
Oh, really? That's cool.
You know, it's not using, and I don't have to put a great big piece of wood in there either. As a matter of fact, a lot of my wood in my shed, I'm going to have to bust it now.
Oh, really?
Make it a little bit smaller.
That stuff, so, but
I'm happy with it.
That's awesome. But talking about your dog and cat stuff, so it's been last Friday and stuff. One of the reasons we couldn't do a show last week was a really bad week for just everybody. It was just long hours. Working, you know, 10, 12 hours a day and stuff. And so Friday came and everything, and they're like, you going to do a show? And I'm like, no, I think I'm just going to do a rerun and stuff because I'm really, really tired. I don't know if I can make the drive and stuff like that. But also on Friday morning and stuff, I was out feeding cattle, put out 2 or 3 rows of hay. And I was like, hey, you know, it's nice weather out and stuff. I'll go hook my drag up. And stuff. So I got this drag that it's made out of. I made it myself. It's got 3 of the railroad ties, and then it's got an I-beam in the front that cuts the ground and stuff. So me and Abby was out dragging and stuff, and it really soft and stuff. I was trying to cut my ruts down and stuff. My ruts are starting to get really deep, you know, already this time of year, especially with all the rain and everything. And so I jump out of the tractor. To close a gate, and Abby, she is 13 years old now. She's a blue heeler, and she's always been on the farm. But here in the last, I don't know, 6 months, she has to have me assist her getting out of the tractor. She can jump up in the tractor great and stuff, but when she goes to jump out and stuff, she can't, she get a little wobbly.
Well, she's getting arthritic.
And stuff, so I've been picking her up and helping her out. But I go out I jumped out of the cab to open the gate and everything, and I heard her whelp. And I was like, oh no, what happened and stuff. Paul, let me tell you. And stuff. My heart never sank like it did and stuff, because I've had this dog for 13 years
now. Well, I know how it is.
And she had jumped out behind me, because she'd seen me jump out, so she went to jump out behind me. She got her back paw stuck in the top step and stuff. No. And you know, tractor steps, they're real thin metal, got them rough spots in them, so you get traction stuff. She got her paw stuck in that, and she cut her leg real bad. And, I mean, they was blood going everywhere.
Well, you got them big arteries right down in there.
And so, talking about arteries, so we finally get the blood stopped and everything. I call the store, hey, we got any gauze? Mom says, yeah, we got gauze. Do you need it? And I said, I might need it here in a little bit and stuff. I think I got it, the bleeding to stop. And so I told Abby, I said, Abby, stay here. I'll go get the truck and I'll put you in the truck and take you to the barn. And of course, she didn't listen this time, so she was running. So every time she'd make a step, it'd gush out blood. Get to the barn and stuff, get the bleeding, stop again and stuff, get it cleaned up, look like it never happened. And so I was like, all right, you're cool, you know, you're good. That was at 10:20, 10:30 that morning. And so go to lunch, come back, and load her up into the little farm truck. And she hit my chainsaw or my weed eater or something or other and opened that wound up
again. Oh, no.
And here it went to gushing blood again. So this is, you know, right at 12 o'clock. And so we drive back to the barn as fast as we can get there and everything. And we finally got the blood to stop, stop bleeding and everything. But she was sitting there shivering and stuff. I was like, oh, no, this is not good. So I called one vet, and he was in surgery and wasn't able to get to me in time. And so I called another vet, and they're like, yeah, just bring her on in. We'll get to her. And so I take them over to Countryside. Doc Bailey was over there and had to wait just a few minutes and stuff. And I said, Doc, could she bleed out? And he said, there's a small chance that she could bleed out.
Well, that big artery down towards the foot down there.
She had cut through the meat all the way to the artery, and so they had to go in and cauterize the artery to keep it from bleeding and stuff. And so that was my Friday. That's why I didn't get to make it over here and stuff. But they called me. They said, yeah, we'll keep her overnight, we'll do that little surgery real quick, and you come pick her up on Saturday morning. That's cool, you know, that I can do that. And about 4 o'clock that afternoon, they'd call me and said, hey, Mr. Creech, she's ready to go. I'm like, oh crap. So put down everything, take off to the vet's office, grab her and stuff. They put her in one of those cones and stuff. She's in a soft
cast. They hate them things.
Oh, yeah. And she's in a soft cast on her leg. She has to take, you know, medicine so it don't get infected and all that. And so 1 week later, so today I finally finished up her medicine. I took the cone off of her. She's doing good. She still can't put a whole lot of weight on the leg yet.
But she'll save it for a while.
And stuff, but she is in a soft cast. I went ahead and took the cone off of her and everything. And so she's doing a lot better. She's been staying in the house. Well, Abraham, my other dog, is Abby's son. He is a blue heeler mixed with a beagle.
Oh, no.
He is 7 or 8 years old. I can count on 3 fingers how many times they've been apart. And so this dog is yelling and just brrr. I'm like, good Lord, you'll be fine. Mama's in the house. You're in the barn and stuff. He did not stay in the barn and stuff. Friday when I left, Abby was in the house and stuff. And Abraham was in the barn in the kennel. Neighbor says, about 9:30, he seen Abraham out walking around the house, trying to get into the house when I talked to him Saturday morning. Come to find out, Abraham destroyed the kennel to get to Abby and stuff. So Abby and Abe's been staying in the house all week and stuff, because these dogs have never... He tore up my storm window.
Well, he wanted to get to his mama.
He wanted to get to his mama. He tore up the storm window, the screen in the storm window, chewed up my back door to my deck.
Oh, no.
And stuff. There's muddy paw prints all over the glass of my front door of the trailer and everything and stuff. But I was like, you know what? You've not been apart for like 7 or 8 years and stuff. So I'll just let you all stay together. I have a kennel inside the house and stuff for when it gets really cold outside. And so they've been staying in there all week.
Well, you know, there's so many people out there, Lloyd, that just consider their critters just dumb animals. No feelings or nothing. You know, they have as much feeling as you and I have.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, if you love your animals, you're going to see that, you know?
Yeah, yeah. My dogs, one's a cattle dog, one's a cattle dog mixed with a squirrel dog, rabbit dog, whatever you
want. Sooner be this and is that.
He don't know if he's supposed to be chasing rabbits or cows. And so
or his tail.
Now, he's never chased a tail, really. I never could train him real well. But when he chases cattle, he knows that they're not supposed to be around me. So he keeps about a 50-foot area around me clear. But when we go to start trying to get cattle off a fence or trying to move them from pasture to pasture and stuff, he always runs past them and turns them back on you. And so that's real fun. And then, but you got
well. That's where you want purebreds, you know, that yeah. are trained for. Anytime you mix one like that, they don't know.
Yeah,
know.
They don't understand. Abby is trained cattle dog. She knows left, she knows right, she knows reverse and stuff. She knows to put them on fence and stuff like that. So it's really cool to have them and stuff. I've had her for 13 years. Here in the last year or two, she's really starting to shy away from the cows. She's been kicked a lot and stuff, but she's yeah. starting to slow down now.
I've been kicked by a few of them.
Yeah, it feels great, don't it?
Mm-hmm.
And so she's learned her lesson stuff. They've caught her out on it and stuff, and they know that she's not as vicious as she used to be. And so she's starting to slow down a little bit and stuff. But, you know, she's my dog. I've had her for 13 years and yeah. stuff. I trained her and everything. I've had her since she
was... Well, you get, you know, I've had two spots, 14 now, but, you know, I wouldn't know what to do if all of a sudden she was gone.
Yeah.
She's just part of my life, you know. I mean, she goes where I go, you know, she don't bother nothing. I take her places. I could bring her in this studio right now. She just lay right there on
oh,
the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so Trace is like, you know, Lloyd, you need to start thinking about Abby and Abraham and maybe getting another cattle dog. And stuff, because if anything ever happened to Abby and stuff, what's Abraham going to do? Because he's always had another dog there to mm-hmm. kind of take care of him and stuff. And I says, well, I can't think about that yet and stuff. I'll give her, you know, I'll give her at least another year and stuff. She's a really good, healthy dog. There's nothing wrong with her. Other than
you take care of them, they can live a long time.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And stuff, and where they're not around other dogs. They'll not get diseases and everything like that.
Well, through my lifetime, I've had dogs ever since I was a little baby boy, you know, and every time I've lost one, I say, I'll never get another dog.
But, that's when dinosaurs roamed Earth, wasn't it?
Yeah, about then, you know, okay. Long before you were hatched. But the thing is, a dog will find you.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Two Spots found me. She was just a little baby dog, you know, and she just became my dog, you know.
I had a girlfriend when I had Abigail. And she knew this couple up in Frankfort that was having their pups. Their dog had just had a litter of pups. And I said, if you don't mind, I said, I will pay whatever they want for it and stuff, but I want the runt female. And they're like, why? And I said, because the runt female is one of the most loyal dogs you can
yes,
get.
Yes, they are.
And so they give me the runt female. They gave it to me. And stuff, they said, here, you know, nobody wants the runt female. I'm like, well, I do. And it turned out to be one of the best dogs I ever had.
Well, so I think female dogs are smarter than male dogs. I really do.
They probably are.
That doesn't go with all species out there, you know, but it works with dogs. But did I ever tell you how I got Two Spots?
Uh-uh.
Well, I had my apartment up there in Millersburg back years ago. Yeah. People across the hall there, they had three little children, four little children, I can't remember now. Well, they didn't drive anywhere, and they wanted a puppy, and I told them when I come in from work that day, they knew a place to go get one, and I said, well, I'll drive you out there. I was an old Ford-ton truck. Well, I drove Jill out there, and I could smell that pen before I got to it. And it was just small. It wasn't much bigger than this room we're in.
Yeah.
And there had to be 14, 15 pups in there.
Oh, wow.
And they were all dark-colored dogs except for Two Spots. And she was a little, people call her White, but she's more like a little gold tan looking.
Yeah.
But a little fuzzy little pup, you know. But she was sitting in the back corner of that cage by herself. The other dogs were all over each other. And I didn't get out of the truck, and I thought to myself, well, I hope she gets that little yellow dog back there.
Yeah.
And when she got out of the truck and started towards that pen, Two Spots just went barreling right through all them other puppies and got right there at the gate. I said, I hope she reaches in there and gets there. And she did. She reached in and just grabbed the first one that showed itself.
Yeah.
Well, when she got back in the truck with it, I seen them two gray spots on her shoulder. And I looked over, I said, well, hello there, Two Spots. And she turned around, looked at me, and come over and got my lap. And Jill said, no, I'm going to call her Daisy. And I said, well, her name is not Daisy. I said, it's Two Spots.
Yeah.
And ended up being my dog. I mean, it spent most of its time at my apartment. And just and she got up one morning barefoot and stepped in puppy poop, and she decided she didn't need a dog anymore.
Oh, no.
And I said, well, it doesn't matter. You didn't have one anyway. It'd just come over there and poop, you know. So it, I've had her 14 years now. So.
Well, Teresa and I stuff, I think I told y'all a couple weeks ago, that we went ahead and got another dog for the house, and it is a Australian Shepherd mixed with a poodle, so it's called an Aussie Doodle.
Aussie Doodle.
And it's more hair than it is anything, but it's hypoallergenic, so it don't shed a lot.
Sounds like my boss. He's from Australia.
And the dog, his name is Oscar and stuff, and so we've had Oscar now for about a month. 3 weeks to a month, something like that. Loves kids. Most laid-back dog. He don't bark at nothing. And just really laid-back. Supposed to be one of the smarter dogs out there and stuff. We've not really started training him yet until he gets all the shots and all that. But Bubby loves him and stuff. He's come part of the house and stuff. Teresa has a eye watch that she has on her wrist. And stuff, she can answer phones and text with it and all this and all that highfalutin stuff that
I wouldn't know how to turn it on.
And she said, Lord, she said, you know, I was checking my blood pressure the other day, and she said, it checks your blood pressure for
oh,
you.
Oh, no.
Like, yeah, yeah. And so she goes, my points are down 10 points right now. And I was like, how many days does that go back? She says, 16 days. I says, you know what we did 16 days ago?
Got that dog. And it lowered her blood pressure.
And it lowered her blood pressure. 10 points in 16 days.
Well, they claim animals will help people that are, you know.
Yeah. And that is a scientific fact that if you own a dog and you become anywhere attached to it and stuff, it will help lower your blood pressure and stuff. That's scientific study. And she goes, you know, you always said that stuff, and I never really believed you and stuff. I said, right there's the evidence.
Well, my neighbors has got a dog that kind of raises my blood pressure every time I go in the house. It's a good dog, but it's so hyper, and it's a big, strong dog, you know.
Yeah, that stuff. But this Oscar and stuff, the dog we got, it looks like a big old teddy bear.
Well, Australian Shepherds are good dogs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And so when you get him wet, he's a 25% of or he's a quarter of what he looks like he could be, mm-hmm. and stuff. This little bitty dog right now, but he's definitely growing and stuff.
He'll fill out.
He's supposed to be around 50, 55 pounds when he's fully grown.
That's about 2 spots. That's what she is.
And so, but he's just really laid back. Bubby's in love with him. And stuff, and it's just,
and you don't need a real barky dog either, you know. But 2 spots is not. Now she'll wolf a little bit. If somebody pulls up that she doesn't recognize their vehicle, she'll let me know.
Oh yeah,
but it's not a big barking thing.
Uh-huh.
But now the other morning, about 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning, it was still dark out. I heard her outside barking,
uh-huh.
and it sounded like she was right next to the house, and then it sounded like she's way far off. I said, "What in the world is she doing?" So I got up and put my slippers on, got the big flashlight, went out, started looking around. Well, I got that old toilet up on the hillside there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't use it no more. And but she had dug a hole in the front of that thing and had her head stuck underneath there, and she'd come out every once in a while and bark, and stick her head back in. I said, what are you doing? I went out there and looked. She had a big old possum down in there. I said, well, you know, you're not going to get that possum. I went back there.
Abby and Abe and stuff, they're out there in the barn. And that's where their dog food's kept. They got an automatic food feeder and everything. And so the mice are always trying to get into the feed and stuff. And they're all, you know, they're the big old field rats and stuff. And they kill just about every one of them and stuff. Not every day, but a lot of the days I go out there, they say, "Hey, Dad, look what I got."
Yeah.
And stuff. And so they my rat killing dogs and my cattle dogs too. So.
Well, I was working over at Perry's barn one time doing some work. Two Spots was a lot younger, and she killed, I don't know, two or three rats while we were there.
Oh yeah.
In the barn. Well, he had a donkey out there in the field, and she killed that one rat and brought it out there and showed it to me. I said, "I ain't got time to fool with you and your rat." So she took it out in the field and laid it down in front of that donkey.
Oh no.
That donkey's looking at that rat, she's looking at the rat. She had to show it to somebody, you know. Darnest thing I ever seen.
But one thing to get back on the Mr. Wolf, you know, told me stuff. You need to share your experiences.
Yes, you do.
And stuff. So, you know, one reason I like Paul and stuff, because Paul called me and said, he's like, "Hey, man, you need to come look at this house and stuff." So I've been to two different houses already. One of them is a brand new house being built by old logs. Another one's an old house that was built in 1757. And so if you really watch how, you know, they join their logs together and stuff.
Well, this house was perfect. There was Campbells, I think was their name. They were Scottish people. And I don't know if they actually did the building themselves or they brought somebody, a master builder. But those notches on those logs are so clean. And, I mean, you couldn't take the blade of your pocket knife.
Is it a double notch?
It's a V-notch. The old German notch, they called it.
Okay.
It's not a dovetail. The dovetail didn't get popular in Kentucky until the 1800s.
Okay.
You know, and it was my understanding of the history, he was a Dutch cabinet maker, and he wanted to build his own house, and he wanted a better notch than the V-notch. Because a V-notch will shed water to the inside.
Yeah.
And he wanted something that didn't shed water to the inside. So he took the dovetail, which they used in drawers, on sides of drawers to hook them together, and he cut that in half, made a half dovetail. So when they say dovetail on a log house, it's a half dovetail.
Yeah.
So all the angles that are cut all shed to the outside.
Oh, okay.
And it's a little bit more of a complicated notch, you know. I mean, you have to pretty much have a template and all that. But whoever did this house, they knew what they were doing.
Yeah. And stuff. And to get back to the story there, it was I watched Paul and stuff. Paul's a good instructor. He likes to teach people, you know, about a log cabin. He's an awesome bricklayer and stuff. Or not bricklayer, but rock layer.
Yeah, let's not bring up bricks, Lloyd.
Yeah. I get in trouble.
No more bricks.
No more bricks. But, no, he shows me, and that's one thing I have never done ever is laid block and stuff. And so one of these days I'm going to find somebody that can show me how to mix up the proper amount of sand and
well, it depends on what you're laying. You know, brick and block are two different mixtures, you know, as far as texture. And rock is completely different. And it depends on the weight of the rock, whether you're laying it like in a foundation or in perch, or whether you're doing a veneer. Every mix is different for it.
Yeah.
So
what's the difference between, so you need to be really sticky?
Well, with rocks, yeah, pretty much, because, you know, that you don't have that much of a base. You got a brick there, it's only, you know, 4 inches by 8 or 10.
Yeah.
You want them stuck together.
Uh-huh.
Now, you start taking big rocks, old field rocks or big old chimney rocks, all you're really wanting to do there is put a leveler in between them. See, in the old days, they just used, when... The old term for mixing mortar is called mud.
Uh-huh.
They called it, and that's what they used was mud.
Uh-huh.
They'd find the clayiest ground they could get, and they'd just swap it up, you know, and they used it for a leveler. It's because you had so much mass there sitting on it, it's not going to go anywhere.
Yeah. And so you're talking about rock walls, rock fences.
Right.
And stuff like that.
Foundations, you know.
And stuff. You just want something to help level the rock with.
Well, these big monster fireplaces that are on this house, you know, they're put together with just dirt.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at that when I was over there the other day.
As long as they got a good foundation, they're sitting down on something solid, they're not going to go anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I have to go in and repoint the outside where, it's, you know, the weather's got in there and eat it out. But now the foundation on that house is laid in what's called a perch, and a perch was anywhere from 16, 18, 2 foot thick. And so they basically, they laid a fairly dressed out nice piece of rock wall here and a nice piece of rock wall out there, and then they filled the middle with just old brick brack, broken pieces, dirt, whatever they could throw in there, and that was called a perch.
Okay. And the other day when I was, Trace and I and Bub, we went and got, went up to Flemingsburg, up there to that Dinnertime Market, which is a Mennonite store and stuff, and then we took a ride to Moorhead, and on the way down to Moorhead, I don't know if they're trying to make a quarry or they just happened into some really nice limestone, but they have some equipment there that looks like they're trying to make limestone, help me out, Paul, that stuff goes in the ground. The
I ain't got a clue what you're talking about.
Footers. And stuff. So they're trying to make limestone. They've got some really nice, they ran into some limestone that it looks like it's 14 inches thick.
Oh, big old slabs of it.
And they're cutting it down into square rectangles, or not square, they're cutting it down into rectangles.
In the blocks, yeah.
In the blocks and everything. And they're doing a really cool job with
it. Well, anything, rock that have never seen the sunlight, it's malleable. You can cut it and work it. You let it out in the sun for a year, and you're going to have a hard time with it.
Limestone is a hard rock, but it's still malleable when it's wet.
Right.
You just unearth
it. It hasn't baked from the sun either.
Yeah, and stuff. So you can work with limestone if it's never been in the sun.
Well, I've done rock footers on a lot of houses. Well, my front part of my house is rock. Yeah. Susan's house is rock. Quite a few. And, you know, you just dig a footer and you lay your biggest, flattest rocks in the bottom of that footer.
Uh-huh.
And then you use dirt for a leveler, whatever dirt you're digging out, and just lay as many big old chunks of flat rock in there. And then when you get up to the top, just fill it full of dirt and let it rain on it for a week.
Yeah.
And settles down. And then you've got a good, solid footer.
And so you're, like you said, so the mud's just a leveler on
your
thing.
And if it can't get washed out the sides anywhere, it's going to be there from now on.
Yeah. And so especially with using the big limestones for the footers and everything. Brick wall or for cinder block walls and stuff, what kind of mud do you need for that?
Well, you use a type N mortar. You know, it's on rock, I use cement, Portland. You know, and I use a heavy sand mixture with it. Like I said, it doesn't have to be real sticky. But now on block and brick, I basically mix it 50-50. If you got one level shovel full of sand, you want level shovel full mortar.
Okay.
You know, and you got to kind of feel it. You don't want it real soupy because you don't want it running off all over the place. And you don't want it real thick because then you can't get things to level down. And you got to keep an eye on your mortar, too, while you're working it. You know, you don't want it sitting up in your wheelbarrow.
Yeah.
And you don't mix up any more than you think you can use in just a little short period of time, or you're having to throw water in it and chop it up. And once mortar, it's got hardening agents in it.
Uh-huh.
And once it starts setting up, you really don't want to start making it wet again because you're losing that hardening strength in it. So, you know, you just got to, it takes experience, time. And yeah, but I like working with rocks, and I like working with fieldstone, old rough ones, because every one of them is different.
Yeah.
I did the Catholic Church here in Ravenna years ago. We put in the Sister Virgin Mary, you know, and it was a big block enclave, you know, and then we rock veneered it.
Uh-huh.
And every kind of strange rock, we were bringing them out of the creeks everywhere, you know, mostly creek rocks. And I remember this one guy walked up there one day, and we'd had about, I don't know, probably half or two-thirds of the rock laid up, and there was one big weird-looking rock right in the bottom of it. He said, "It's amazing how you got that one rock to fit in there like that. It's like we'd had an open hole and we just put that rock in." Hey, Ralph, we just put that in there and laid rock around it, you know. It's like
Well, John called me. John got his electric turned on over at his cabin the other day. And he goes, "Lloyd," he said, "you know, we're going to put a fireplace in it and stuff." He said, "What would you do?" I said, "I think I would put that fake rock in there.
Eldorado or whatever they call it.
Yeah, whatever it is and stuff." But I said, "It's kind of expensive from
life." Yes, it is.
And you know, stuff. And so he gets looking around online and calling people and stuff like that. And I forgot what he told me, but it was way up there for a little piece of it. And I was like, "Hey, John," I said, "why don't you just make you a form, go get you some nice-sized creek rock somewhere, put it on the bottom, mix you up some concrete, pour that into your form, shake it a little bit, and put you some little pieces of rubber through it so you could screw it down and stuff, and then flip it, you know, wood off there, that form off there, and so you've already made your own, you know, fireplace stone and everything. He goes, you know, I've never thought about that, but he says, I'm going to give that a try, because he said...
Well, he could come to down to my creeks in the summer, too, and put on some gum boots and just throw flat rocks out of the creek.
Yeah, and so I was like, dude, that would be awesome, because you don't need a very big space and stuff. It's a corner unit, and so he needs like what a home plate looks like, a baseball, a diamond there, and then a couple pieces coming down off the wall to protect the wood from the heat and everything.
So he's not doing a great big rock thing. He just wants what's showing inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, tell him to come up here in the hollow. You know, we'll get him some nice flat rocks out of the creek.
Oh, yeah. And he says that has to be a whole lot cheaper than buying that.
That stuff is very expensive. And, you know, and if you're going to get the good fake rock, it's high. You know, it's going to cost you a small fortune to do it. And the cheaper stuff looks cheap.
Yeah.
You know, it's just real brittle, too. You know, you got to be careful. We've tried cutting it. It's going to bust all over the place. But you're talking about casting rocks. I don't think you've been that way, but you've always come through Furnace to my place. But if you go down Cobb Hill and go to Irvin that way, down on 52, it looks like a big rock house down on the low side of the road. Big, giant, massive sand rocks.
I don't think I've ever seen it.
Well, it's not rock. That guy was one of the masons that helped build the Irvin Courthouse and the old Clay City rock. And he couldn't afford the rocks for his own house, so he made forms and made brown concrete rocks.
Yeah, okay.
And built that house. And it's built in purchase. It's just a great big old thick walled. Everybody thinks it's a rock. When you have to really know. You get up and look at it, and every one of them's identical.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was at Home Garden Show several years ago, and they have this new high-strength, low-weight concrete. And they had a log house there that was not log. It was made out of concrete and stuff, and it had concrete forms and stuff, but it was a high-stress concrete that didn't weigh as much and stuff. And they put it in a form that looked, had little ridges and lines and stuff. And when they took the form off, it looked like a timber house and everything. And
then they could just paint it, you know.
Yeah, just paint it, and you don't have to ever have to mud it or nothing like that. And I was asking the guy, I was like, now, I know this is new technology coming out. I said, how much would this for a, you know, 1,500 square foot house cost? And he says, right now, he said, it will scare you.
Concrete's high.
And stuff. He said, it's, you know, that at the time it was cheap and stuff. And he said, it will scare you and stuff. He said, let it come on the market for a couple of years and let it go down and stuff. And then build these houses and stuff. Well, problem with that is, it's 2023 now. It's like $200 a yard for concrete now.
Yeah, it's outrageous.
And stuff, and it's not going to go down. No,
I think the last time I bought some, it was like $57 a yard.
Yeah, I mean, and so that would be a really cool alternative to having a log house without actually having logs in it and stuff. But now concrete's through the roof.
Well, they're still growing trees, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I've got four or five big poplar logs. There on the farm, I'd like to see somebody do something with.
Well, I told you I got that Alaskan sawmill.
Well, I wanted to U them out, you know, and I look at them every. I walk by them every day on my little evening walk, and I go, that's on the list of things to do.
Well, won't you start on it then?
Well, if I did that, then it wouldn't be on the list of things to do anymore.
Okay.
Then I'd have to put something else on that list.
Like that chimney, huh?
Yeah. Well,
all right, folks, we are out of time for this week and stuff. It's been enjoyable sitting here talking, going back and forth.
I got one thing, though. Since we were talking about rocks, we had been talking about multi-purpose tools.
Yeah.
Now, I wonder, years back dinosaurs, I wonder what Barney and Fred would sit around the campfire, and Barney would say, well, Fred, what do you do with your new rock today?
Don't know.
Multi-purpose tool.
Yeah. That stuff. Talking about that stuff, I'm going to start making Viking chairs. Have you seen Viking chairs?
Viking chairs?
Yeah.
I think I've got them in a book there at the house someplace.
Stuff. They're a 2x12 that's been cut down and everything. I'll show you the plans on it one of these days. I'll make one this weekend, hopefully. That stuff. But that's all we got for this show and stuff. Guys, I hope you enjoyed it.
Well, It takes me 2 to 3 weeks before I can figure out something to talk about. So, you know.
That stuff, write it down. That's the easy part. Write it down.
What's that? Writing.
Right. Well, that's better than typing it, so.
Well, I wouldn't know typing either, so.
All right, guys. I hope you had a good weekend stuff, blessed weekend, and a blessed work week ahead. Paul, you got anything else to add?
No, sir. Just it's been a fun time, Lord. I enjoyed it every time.
All righty, guys. We'll catch you here next night. So long.
Love the Lord anew till the day I'm dead.